Hello and welcome to Movies and Tea After Hours. I'm your host as always, Edward Jones, and joining me, of course, is my co-host, Miss Kim Lowe.
Hello.
Tonight, we throw ourselves into the Oscar season as we look past lives. And so this is released in 2023. It's the directorial debut of Celine Song, who previously has a background in theatre and did The Tempest through The Sims 4. This is a film which has had a lot of buzz because once Barbieheimer had finished, people needed something to focus their attentions on, and Past Lives seems to really been that film, which especially more so now it has gone on to Netflix. The film itself follows Nora and Hae Sung, two childhood friends who are reunited in New York for one fateful week as they confront the notions and destiny, love and choices that make a life. Thank you, Letterboxd, for that summary. This is a film which follows a friendship slash romance between these two childhood friends, really from when they meet as children, again when they reconnect as adults, and then once more 12 years later. Kim, had you had much of a urge to watch Past Lives before, or is it sort of like the fact that it's received a lot of buzz for the Oscars sort of what inspired you to check it out?
It's kind of the buzz, I think. I think I saw that it was nominated or something, because mine is on Prime, and I saw it on Prime. I think I had some note next to it, and I think it won or got nominated for some awards, and then it caught my eye, because Past Lives is kind of like the type of story which I really like. The setting, the structure, like just the general concept of like the plot that I had read was something that I really liked. It made me feel a little bit like one of my favorite movies, which I think no one actually really likes but me, which is Already Tomorrow in Hong Kong, and a few other movies which are really like just people reconnecting after a long time, or like some meet cute weekend thing which makes you question life, and like films like that. I really like movies like that. So it was what really piqued my interest. I don't think it was really the award season. I really could care less about the award season, to be fair, because I don't really watch anything from the award season for the most part.
That's fair enough. I mean, certainly the fact it was also an A24 release is a sort of thing that gets a lot of people excited in the film community, the same way that I do when there's a film with a new mask. Thank you, Blumhouse. So I think whenever you have an A24 release, there's already the buzz there. And this film really came in the internet, filled that sort of void in many ways. But you had this and you had Anatomy of a Fall, which is another film that I'm really excited to see, and both have got a lot of sort of buzz around them. And after Barbieheimer, we kind of had that void of what else is there, because we, and this still comes along, and it's a lot of people are very excited as well, because it's taking cinema back to its sort of very basics. It's a story that is really driven by plots rather than sort of like big stars and special effects and a lot of money being thrown at it. And also it's an exciting new talent as well, as this film is both written and directed by Celine Song, who here makes her film debut and feels in many ways coming as a fully formed director rather than having the sort of initial sort of stumblings that we see with a lot of directors' first films. This film has sort of like come out to massive critical and general acclaim from the film growing public. But this film, I actually ended up watching it twice, because the first time I watched it, I wasn't sure I'd actually watched the right movie as everyone else, because when you look everywhere you look, it's sort of like rave reviews about this film and a bit, but had this like life-changing experience, and I was like, did I watch the wrong movie or something? So I ended up watching it twice prior to this recording. Did you watch it more than once, Kim, or was it just the ones for yourself?
I would watch it the second time, but I haven't, mostly because I just don't have time. But I really did want to watch it a second time. It's one of those movies which I think you would capture a little bit more, but I think that it's like the the concept of what they're talking about for the entire film, and especially the name being called Past Lives and the concept of Inyan, is something that I'm familiar with, even if, you know, I don't, it's not just a Korean concept, it's like a general Buddhism concept, which is something that I know a little bit about. Mm-hmm. And it's something that, you know, I strongly believe in myself. So it's something that really connected to with me in that sense. So when I saw that this film was about that, when they talked about it, it all of a sudden felt like, okay, well, now I understand why the film was called Past Lives. And then it really made kind of like that last, I don't know what, half an hour or something, really feel very strong. Like, there was such a strong feeling towards that film because of that.
Yeah. The film opens much like Pulp Fiction at the end, as we play the onlooker overhearing a conversation of another off-screen onlooker as they look at Nae-young, Kae-sung, and the character of Arthur, and try to work out the relationship that three characters have to each other, and they argue back and forth whether the two Asian people are together or whether the Americans are tour guide. There's a lot of assumptions, and then the film starts proper as we go way back to 2000. So bizarre that feels that this is a lifetime ago for these characters, when it just feels like yesterday for myself. And we're introduced, obviously, to Nora, who's still going by her Korean name of Nae-young. And she's 12 years old. She's best friends with Hae-sung, the classmates. But at the same time, they got those initial inklings of feelings towards each other and end up going on a date set up by their parents. Kind of like a cute little outing to the art park. But at the same time, Nae-young's family are emigrating to Canada. And this is sort of about, all about, more about creating a happy memory for her before that she leaves. And in the process, she changes her name to Nora Moon. How did you find this initial sort of meeting? Because normally when children are involved, it's excruciating. But I thought this was actually felt pretty grounded and actually kind of nice to watch.
Yeah, I mean, it's very innocent, right? The friendship they have, they don't really, you know, it's at an age where she doesn't really no one really understands what love is, but they like each other. And so this is just best friends going out on a trip and they have fun. And there's a lot of like really positive, kind of like really warm feelings of this entire moment. It feels natural enough to believe that this is, you know, this is happening.
Definitely so, and there's some, you get a lot of the sort of groundings of their relationship. You get the idea that Nora is very competitive because she's announcing to her classmates how she's going to win the Nobel Peace Prize, and at the same time she has this already competitive relationship with Hae-sung, who's very good at sports. And there's lots of little cute moments. The fact that she's there drawing on him with a pen was really cool. And when they're running around the arts park being watched by their mothers, I thought that was also really kind of adorable. And even outside of their relationship, just the initial sort of establishment of like Nora's family unit. Her parents are both creatives. Her father's a director and her mother's a writer. It was just kind of a shame we never really came back to that family unit. We sort of are introduced to them, and then as soon as we leave this block and go on to the next 12 years, so when the story picks up in 2012, they're never seen or heard of again. And it was just kind of a little sad because they seemed like such interesting characters, that family unit. But as I said, we pick up the story 12 years later, and Nora's already emigrated again because this time she's moved to New York and she's working trying to build a career as a writer. So did you feel you lost anything by not returning to the family unit, or were you just happy just to focus on Nora and Hae-sung?
I'm okay with it. I don't really mind because, you know, you had glimpses of the mom come back where you can tell that she still has a really close relationship with her mother because, you know, they're both like, talking about friends from Korea and looking them up on, I don't know, Facebook or whatever social media she's on. And it's like this really fun moment. But I don't think it's necessary because the film is meant to be very focused on this relationship itself. I think that if it went into the family, it would bring in a lot more complicated issues. Because if you were to bring in a family, that means they would have to bring up some type of issues that would make their existence in the film, right? And
yeah.
And I don't think it needed that complexity because the film already has that kind of already has that complexity about relationships. Like, where do you draw the line of romance? And, like, what is, you know, like, there's a lot of things here. It's like, oh, well, you're looking at fate. You're looking at destiny. You're looking at, you know, the relationship that they have over these three phases in life. And embracing whether the feelings that they have for each other, or maybe even just the regrets right at the end. So I think that that focus is enough. We reviewed Already Tomorrow in Hong Kong together, right?
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah. So if we like take that film for example, it's the same concept where if you were to bring other people in other than being mentioned, would that complicate the situation? Would it make it unnecessary? Because right now the focus of the film is on basically these three people. It's to simplify the situation between them three. But a relationship itself is already complex enough without having more people added to it. I didn't really think it was necessary for a family unit to be involved.
No.
Because of that reason. Because this is a romance. You don't need to add the family in, add more melodrama. That's going very, like, Asian film, traditional Asian film type of vibe. And I think they're trying to keep it more, like, grounded and subtle.
Definitely so. And it's through this period that Noor reconnects with Hae-sung, who has just finished his military service. And Noor, as we said already, she's in New York. And it's sort of like a through a chance connection because both of them have been trying to find each other. And Hae-sung reconnects with her because he leaves a message on her father's Facebook page. And they re-pick up their relationship and they're chatting over Skype. And they make these little sacrifices for each other so that they can stay in touch. But at the same time, the lingering question is sort of like, when is one going to go to the other? And they've both got these paths that they've set for themselves. I mean, with Noor, she's obviously got her ambitions as a writer, so she doesn't really currently leave New York. Hae-sung has got his own ambitions in his work. I mean, what does Hae-sung actually do? I wasn't really overly sure, because I know he says
he's an engineer.
He's an engineer, right?
Yeah. What engineer, I don't know. But he says he studied engineer. That's all he ever mentioned about his career, right? But yeah. He's an ordinary dude. That's what he says.
And he's going to China because he wants to study Mandarin. And she's like, oh, you know, come to New York and study English instead. And he's like, no, it's better for my career to know Mandarin. So I respect the film for the fact he doesn't, like, take the easy way to bring one person to another. It doesn't take these characters off the track that they're on. It's sort of like, you know, she's not going to give up her career aspirations to go back to Korea, and he's obviously not going to just drop everything to go to New York. And she's already switched focus on the prize that she wants, because she now wants a Pulitzer. Is it the Pulitzer that she... Yes, she wants a Pulitzer. So she's, as I said, very sort of setting her sort of goals. And I think it was that sort of realism that really helped make the film sort of stand out again. These are characters who, while they obviously have these sort of like dream careers, I mean, nobody's really working, feels that they're working the the retail job or something. They've got these like nicer careers where they're like a writer or engineer who doesn't actually have to go anywhere. I think that was my only real sort of quibble really with these characters. It's just their career choices. They seem so hipsterish. It's like go work a job where people shout at you. Then I will be happy. I will have... That's the problem. And I think this is just a genre thing. It's like everyone has these like careers where they've got ample time to go and pursue things and live sort of like happy lives and be creatives and stuff. And in real life, you don't get to do that. So,
I mean, the thing with this one is that it's not. It does keep itself grounded to reality because they're not like making it seem like Nora and Arthur are swimming in money. They're living off of very basic, you know, type of apartment and very, very just, you know, normal standard living, right?
Mm, true.
And I think that's the reason why Arthur also questions the, you know, like the relationship that he has with her, because you know, they did get married for her to get a green card to stay in New York.
Yeah, because we've not introduced Arthur, really, have we? Because he's the Jewish American that we meet at the writer's retreat she attends. And he's sort of like the spanner in the works. The person we assume is going to be the antagonistic party in this love triangle.
Arthur is an interesting character, and I think you say it really, oh, really well, because he's meant to be antagonistic. He's supposed to come between Hae-sung and Nora, but that's the thing with this film, is that no one's really antagonistic towards each other. It's all a very peaceful, passive, not even passive-aggressive, just passive type of relationship that they're having with each other in that, you know, final chunk where we're meeting everybody after the whole little moment with the whole online, you know, air quotes relationship, because they never really called themselves dating, but, you know, they reconnected. It makes you think a little bit about just, I think that Hae-sung doing this is mostly for just a regret, I think. Maybe a part of him regrets that he never really took that step. And now he wants to see whether Nora is genuinely happy in this, you know, in her new life. And just to see her being happy will be good enough for him, I think. It's just that moment that he needs. You know, that type of closure for himself. For this relationship, you know, to try to close the doors of the feelings that he has for her. I don't know. I really like Hae-sung. I think that the actor is the best out of the three. I think he's such a... There's so many things that they write this character. And then T-O-U, is that his name?
Yes.
He's such a great actor. And I think that I'm more enthralled by how he portrayed his role than anybody else. Like, I think there's so many moments and so many things that makes you really think about all of these little moments and what grabs you for like Greta Lee's portrayal of Nora is really in that last moment. Those last moments, you can really feel like her character right from that bar scene all the way till the ending where she's walking down the street and walking back to her apartment. And that's where you really connect with her character. And it's like this subtle thing that kind of you didn't feel before, but then it comes. And yeah. So I don't know. There's a lot of feelings. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm a romantic and it's like I watch a lot of things like this that really... I connected with it so much because I feel like, you know, when you're talking about it, it feels like you didn't, there's things that you didn't connect with as much. So I don't know, like, how did you feel about the character? Like, which character, did you connect with any of the characters out of the three?
Oh, I definitely, I mean, I really liked Hae-sung. I think he's a really fantastic character, especially because he's got his own little friends group. You've got, like, the gender swap version of Sex and the City happening back in Korea, as he meets these same three friends over the course of this the Christmas period, and they meet in this restaurant and they eat food and they drink beer and they go over what the Billy sort of go over the key things that are happening in his life. So when he's dating someone, when he's talking about like reconnecting with Nora, these guys are always there for him. And as I said, their advice is sometimes questionable and they care more about getting drunk, but it's really great to have that sort of like friend circle, so yeah, we can see what's going on in him rather than him being this aloof character. Because there's certain parts of this where he is kind of aloof, he's kind of shy, especially when we get into the final part of this film and he comes to New York and he meets Nora's husband. And these two actors were kept, you know, apart from each other until they shot those sequences because they wanted it mm-hmm. to have that sort of awkwardness. And I think that really carries across in the film. And mm-hmm. you have that moment where these two great loves of her life are facing off against each other and they're left alone at the bar to each other. And they realize that neither is a threat to each other. And they slowly find things to connect over, because up until that point, it's sort of like Haesung is like Nora's friend, her, it's hard to call him like an ex-boyfriend because it never really goes
far. He's not. But yeah, no, because you know, the deal with it is that I think that a part of it is that Haesung, when they had that last speech on that online chat, right? And she was like, okay, well, I need to take a, you know, like, have some space or not talk for a while or whatever, she forwarded it. And then it was just like, it's not like we're dating or something, right? And I think that in some ways, I think that they wanted to take, see if he would take that step and say something. But no one did. You know, and no one did, and that's how we ended up with this, you know, 12 years later, and he's coming here, and oh my goodness, you know, that bar moment when they're talking, when we have that, like, oh, you know, the beginning scene, now we finally see the conversation that is happening on the other side of the table, and the moment that Haesung is like, I never knew it would hurt this much to like your husband. My heart literally broke. Like, I was like, oh my goodness, this is so sad. And then I was just like,
I totally get what you mean. There's so many aspects of this film that really sort of rung so true with myself, and the fact it openly mocks the audience's expectation of the film is probably one of my favorite bits of the film. Is there's a scene where they went Arthur and Nora in bed, and he's sort of like trying to compare their situation to this traditional sort of love story setup, and this is sort of like, am I supposed to be like the abusive husband who's like keeping you from your true love? Is this the role I'm supposed to be playing? And they both laugh and joke about it, and it's sort of like, you realize that, like, Celine Song's basically saying, like, you may have this expectation as the audience, but it's not the way we're going to go with this. And there's so much of this film, you're, like, waiting for the other foot to drop, for him to, like, show some side of him, or to be, like, too slovenly, or to have this flaw that's going to mean that she can leave him to go with Haesung, her true love. And it just doesn't happen.
Yeah. I think that that's what's so amazing, because, you know, like, we're, I think that that's why the bar scene is probably one of the best romantic scenes I've seen in a very long time. Because, you know, like, you're watching this scene, which has this kind of, like, subtle notion, and because it was hinted at the beginning of people guessing what they were talking about, it kind of makes that conversation feel even a lot more poignant, because now that we actually are on their side of the table and we hear what they're talking about, and you finally see, like, oh, you know, like, you expect Arthur to probably be more, you know, voicing, you know, like, if you were in the situation where, you know, like, oh, your wife went to go talk to some longtime friend that they hadn't seen, and they sat together, and then they started talking in their own language that you probably understands, like, what, 5-10% of what they're talking about. And then he's just sitting there and he's just letting them talk and laugh in their in Korean. And he, you know, like, how awkward would you feel? But he's just sitting there. And then, like, she would turn around. She was like, oh, he's talking about you, you know, type of thing. And then it's like, but she doesn't elaborate what she's talking about.
Yeah. But that also, again, feels, like, very realistic. There's so many times that I used to work with a bunch of South Africans, and they used to, like, have, like, full conversations in Afrikaans to each other. And you'd be sitting there going, thinking, are they bad-mouthing me? Or are they just talking about something else? So you do feel that sort of isolation. One of my friends said that he watched the film in with a Korean track just so he could get the Arthur cut. Yeah. So he just said, no, sometimes the daughter's watching completely in Korean. So, and, oh my god, there's so many moments where Arthur's character I felt was just trying to antagonize me into, like, just liking him. Like, the scene with him in bed and he's, like, got his legs wrapped around her and it's sort of like this infantile sort of, like, positioning of it, and he's speaking to her in Korean and she's speaking in English, and I was like, just speak fucking English. Why are you speaking Korean for? She herself has already said already that she only speaks Korean with her mother and Hae-soon. And even, like, Hae-soon says that, you know, her Korean's rusty and awful. So why are we pushing him speaking Korean to her? So is it just,
yeah,
so
but that, I mean, we do realize at the end why he's, like, trying to learn Korean so, you know, so much, is that, I don't know if it's creepy or not, like, but I had mixed feelings about this, but I thought in some ways it was kind of romantic, because you could view it as being romantic, is that he really wanted to understand, because she would dream in Korean.
Right.
And then he really wanted to understand what she was saying. She really wanted to understand what she was dreaming about. And a part of me is like, I'm a dreamer. Like, I sleep talk. I sleep talk really weird things on top of that. And it's just like, I just sometimes feel like when you're dreaming, you want that world. It's like your world of subconscious, right? I don't know why, like, I think for him, it's a sign of insecurity. It's to kind of solidify the fact that he's insecure in this relationship. Because he feels like he doesn't understand what she sees in him. And we kind of get that feel. I don't even understand if... I honestly, for me, I was watching this and I was like, in some ways, I like Arthur. I think he's a really good character. And I can understand, but at the same time, I wonder if their relationship is more goal-oriented, you know? Like, it's very reflective of, say, like, how her own, like, how Nora's own parents are, where it doesn't feel like it's as romantic, but where, at the same time, it's more like they speak the same language. They understand each other because they're both playwrights. They do the same career. I wonder if that's what it is, you know? Because we don't see enough of their relationship to give that element. And what you're led to believe in this film is basically the focus of Nora and Hae-sun's relationship throughout the entire thing. And even when we get to that last part when she's taking him around New York, there's these moments where they're just staring at each other in silence. They're not talking. They're just looking into each other's eyes. And there's, like, this connection that's there. And you have, and it's meant to, I think, let you, like, kind of think whether at the end she's going to leave with him, whether this is enough for them to be together. What type of relationship is this, you know, in between, right? Like, that they're trying to build here. So, I don't know. I mean, I felt like it was kind of like, there were some things in here that I felt like, I like the subtlety, but at the same time, I felt like, if you were going to work on one side of the story, would you not work the other side to kind of give that element? But then I guess because now we don't know that much about Arthur, it kind of gives his character that space that, okay, well, maybe he's going to live up to the jealous boyfriend thing. But he never really does. He's not jealous. He's just insecure.
He is, but then again, you look at where he's going up against, and you already get the feeling when you look at him, even as the outlook, you feel that, you know, perhaps he's settled. And we've sort of stacked the deck a little further by having his, like, assumption that he only married her to get a green card, which I had to do a kind of double take on, because I had in my mind that she emigrates to America, but it's actually Canada, which is separate from America. But
yes,
to us outsiders, we assume Canada and America is the same, and you can go back and forth as you wish. You don't need to have, like, the citizenship, which you obviously do.
Yeah, but that's the thing is, right? I think that's the thing is that even in her conversation sometimes, like, when she's talking to Arthur, she's like, he keeps trying to get her to kind of, like, comfort him in a way by saying, like, oh, this is what she wants. And she just keeps saying, it is what it is, or whatever. It's something, like, along those lines, right? It feels like that's what she's saying. And in many of those conversations, you feel like when he's asking for that answer, that he almost feels like she's settling. And that because her ambition is more important than her romance. She needs to be here because she needs to build her career. This is not something that she's going to give up. This is something that she's worked many, many years to get to. And this is why she's doing this. So between when she has the choice between this, it's like something that she's already used to doing. She, you know, like, and that was one of the things that I thought when they're sitting together in the bar, there's so much more insight on their two characters, because now we see that they understand each other a lot. They understand each other and the place they are. And Hae-sung really, really understands her, where he's like, you know, you're a person. To me, you're a person that leaves. But for him, you're a person that stays, you know? Like, and these little moments, these little dialogues is what really solidifies the character of Nora. In some ways, I guess, it's a little bit more heartbreaking to watch Hae-sung because he's there. And I think in many ways, as we're talking about this, I was just thinking about it. And I really think that Hae-sung did it to say a goodbye, because they never said a goodbye. When they were kids, they didn't really say goodbye. They kind of said they didn't really say what they wanted to say. And then it was just like a really rash type of bye-bye, you know, thing. And then it was like that time afterwards, they didn't really say bye because, you know, they were separating from each other. They were saying bye because they wanted the space. And 12 years later now, it's like bye. It's like a goodbye to their past.
Yeah, I mean, for myself, this is why I really sort of connected with the story on a sort of like more personal level, because there's certain people that I've, like, had such a impactful relationship in my life, and then for whatever reason, they've been taken away, and it leaves you with this sort of, like, void. And yeah. Something that I've only really in the last couple of years, I've managed to repair many of these voids, reconnect with these people. And this is where the story, like, felt like it was really sort of like true. These sort of like really intense relationships, and you feel when you reconnect with the people, and obviously their lives have moved on, they've got married and they've had kids and things, and you realize that, you know, just having that person in your life is what you need. It fills that void. It makes life feel a little more complete and brings that sort of like closure, rather than you constantly wondering, well, what happened to this person. And I think this is when we look at Hae-sung, and he's happy the fact, you know, he has his friend back, and it's not going to be the romantic story that they initially thought, but at the same time they're going to still have their friendship. And he, as you said already, he admits that he likes Arthur, and they get on, which makes it also like only all the worse, because Arthur isn't going to be the antagonist of this relationship. You know, what was initially thought was going to happen between them isn't going to happen, but what we're going to end with is still going to be really good. And as they go away, they sort of like make plans to like pick up this friendship, that they're going to go visit him in Korea. And I thought that was like such a realistic place to leave the film. And I think it was that point it just really sort of hit home just how realistic this film is. And in many ways, it felt also like how Jackie Brown is a film that gets better the older you get. You appreciate the story being told, because when you watch it as a kid when it first like came out, and it's like older people in love, and then you get older yourself and you're like, oh, this is kind of nice. So coming to past lives with that sort of like life experience attached to it sort of really really helped me really connect with this story. And I had doing this is certainly one of those films where much like sort of like it's like Dogtooth, for example, that we do a podcast on it, and I sort of like it sort of finally like locks everything in place, because up until obviously now when we've had this conversation, I was sort of like, oh, I don't really know what it all means, because it's very got a feel of like a lot of those sort of like 90s American indies, sort of like things like by Linklater, for example, where it's a film very driven by its characters' interactions and the dialogue rather than the soundtrack guiding you to tell you how you're supposed to feel, or the film itself even telling you how you're supposed to feel. We're just always the onlooker in this world. We're never sort of like spoon-fed things. We're never told, oh, you know, you must feel this. It's we're just the onlooker, and it's down to us to sort of like choose how we feel about it. And I think this is sort of like the confidence that she has in us as the audience, that we can actually follow a story with this sort of complexities. We can understand why the characters are making the choice that they are. And I respect, I mean, the fact that, yeah, she's not going, as you said already, she's not going to leave New York because she's here. She's pursuing her new goal, which is to get a Tony. She's always pursuing an award of some kind over these three periods, which is good to have ambition. Nothing wrong with that. I kind of
well,
like
because every time he meets her, she's doing something different, right? When she was a kid, it was more like a dream, right? And then when she sees her after, she's a writer, so she wants a Pulitzer, and then now she's a playwright, so she wants a Tony.
Yeah,
so and it all kind of makes sense because it changes with how her life changes.
Yeah, and it becomes like a little joke between the two, and mm-hmm. when they go to New York, and she takes him to see like the Statue of Liberty. And Arthur remarks this, or like, you know, I've never seen that. And I was like, that is so true, because there's so many things when I've lived places that are like big tourist things, but you never go to see them because they're on your doorstep. Like I lived in Cornwall for 21 years and I never went to the Eden Project. When I lived in Birmingham, I never went to the Cadbury's factory, which is a more random example, but it's still true. There's a lot of things around here that, like, I haven't been to, wouldn't have gone to the historical dockyard had it not been for my parents coming up and wanting to see it. So, there's, it's so true, the fact that, you know, you can live on with these things right in your back door and you just never see them. So, I like this film. I don't want to say it's going to be a film that makes my top 10. I don't know about yourself, Kim.
I don't know, because, you know the deal is that before we did this talk, I was thinking about the film a lot since I finished watching it a few days ago. And a part of me is like, I really think that the ending sequence at the bar at the end, that really makes this film, makes up for all of the stuff at the beginning that was really like quiet and subtle and just kind of like going through the padding of the film to kind of build up these two people, right? The past. But then I've been thinking about it more. And as I think about it more and the little details and the little dialogue, I'm starting to really feel like I'm connecting with the film more and more as I go. And I think that's what it is. It's an A24 film, and that's what it's meant to do, you know? That's what I feel like A24 films do, is you have to go back and you have to think about it. And then normally you'll think about the genius afterwards because they're usually so subtle. And this is kind of like what's happening right now, is that when I first finished this movie, I was like Letterboxd, and I was like, okay, well, I kind of feel like this is a 4.5-star film. And then I dropped it to a 4 because I was like, you know, there were things I feel like could have been better. And then as we were talking about here, I started thinking about it and I was like, you know what? I'm starting to connect with this Nora character even more. And I think Greta Lee did a pretty great job. I still like Hae Sung's character more. And then I'm like, so I don't know. This is a real contender. If I think about it more, it might actually make my top 10. Yeah. But obviously, we're still very early in the year. But I think that, you know, I understand. I haven't really read any reviews, but the fact that it's getting so much attention from the award season is quite nice. I always like to see kind of like, you know, Asian films, kind of. This is kind of Asian films.
Yeah, it's in the same way that the nice Farewell's an Asian film, really, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's like an Asian-American film.
Yeah.
Kind of like that. Yeah, I really enjoyed a lot of this. It's fun, you know? Like, there's a lot of films. It made me want to go back to watch some of the films that I've thought about. And a part of me of this film made me feel like, you know, like, the vibe of traveling around New York and connecting with someone is, like, Already Tomorrow in Hong Kong. And then the bittersweet elements of it kind of reminded me of Us and Them, because it felt the same. It was, like, the same type of concept. And I'm not sure if you watched the Chinese film Us and Them, but it's one of the films I really like. I haven't gone back, but I probably will go back to watch it now. Yeah. So it's a very strong contender, I have to say. Like, it's really snuck up on me. I have to probably give this a second watch, and then maybe it'll make even more sense.
I mean, going for myself, it's a 4 out of 5 mainly because I didn't think that the rewatchability was there. And obviously, I say that when I've watched it twice in as many days. So that could be brought into question. But I think you're right. With the A24 movies, they are movies that you perhaps don't get on the first watch, and they sort of call for that sort of like discussion over tea and pie that we obviously are in the fortunate position of doing. So, and while I'm not sort of one of these people who sort of like loves everything that A24 comes out, I don't like see that A24 logo and get that instant banger excitement. So I sort of dip in and out of their catalogue. I thought, as I said, I did like this. I like as well the fact, as I say, it's available for you on Prime. It's available for us on Netflix, because it does mean that, you know, you can go back to it and revisit it with ease, rather than thinking, oh, I've got to rent or buy this again. So I think that certainly works in the film's advantage, and I definitely think it deserves its place in the Oscar running for this year. It'd be interesting to see how the Academy view it, certainly. So, but for myself, it's currently at number 9. You don't want to ask what's either side of it.
I've had a really rough year as of this episode coming out. So mine is very high. Mine is actually at the edge of 4.5 and 4.
Oh, nice.
So it doesn't matter if I go with 4.5 and 4. It's still on the 4th place.
Yeah.
So there's a high chance, if the year keeps going the way it's going for the first 2 months, there's a high chance that this is going to be in my top 10. Let's put it that way.
It's certainly already in a lot of people's top 10s, even though we're still, like, essentially the start of the year. So a lot of people like already saying, oh, you know, this is my film of the year. So it'd be interesting to see what else comes out, obviously, because we've got some big movies coming out. I mean, like I said, we've still got June 2 to watch. So it's going to be interesting to see what comes along to sort of mix things up on the list this year, be it a new film or a discovery. So
I don't know, there's 10 whole months of the year to go. I mean, there's got to be other things that are going to pop up. If my year stops at this, this is going to be the worst viewing year of my, of like, my whole blogging.
Just hate everything.
Oh, trust me, my beginning of the year has been very, very weird.
That said, Past Lives is pretty readily available to stream in most places, as I said, whether it's on Prime or Netflix, depending on where in the world that you are. And I would say it's a recommendation from us both.
Yeah, absolutely, for me, yeah.
But feel free to obviously let us know in the comment section what you thought. Thank you to everyone who responded to our Twitch thread and on Instagram asking what you thought of this movie. Pretty much universally 5 stars across the board. Everyone really seemed to enjoy this movie, which again made me question, like, why am I not having the life-changing experience everyone else is having? So
the question is, are you having it now after our conversation?
You know, I'm probably gonna like go and after this conversation, and it's gonna be like, it's just gonna now reel again. This, you'll enter a third chapter of just like reeling over of what does it all mean. So, and I'll probably end up watching it again and be like, why are you still not giving this 5 stars? You've watched it 6 times. So yeah. Well, that brings us to the end of tonight's episode. Thank you, as always, for listening. If you haven't done already, please do hit the like and subscribe button. Please leave us a review, as it all helps raise the profile of the show. You can follow us on Facebook and Instagram and Threads, so come say hi to us there. And, you know, let us know what your favourite A24 is or what you think of past lives. We'd really love to hear your opinions on the film. But until then, thank you for listening. Thank you to my co-host, Kim. And we'll be back again very soon. But until then, good night.